Hey everybody, this is Mike, and welcome to the second episode of the podcast Feedback and Forth. Today's interesting topics will include how we got into music, where we bought the music, a great purchase of Kiss cards, the Melvins, our good friend Brooks Martin, the Kiss double platinum commercial, heavy music, the Bay City Rollers, weird leather coats, and the bumbling flight of a shopping cart. Enjoy!
Oh yeah, people! I know you're into podcasts! So if you want to listen to a podcast, you better listen to Feedback and Bob with Scott and Mike! Oh, yeah!
Hey, welcome to episode 2 of Feedback and Forth. I'm Scott.
And I'm Mike.
How's it going on your side of the room?
Oh, it's working now.
So. Excellent. We've not had any technical difficulties at all.
No, there wasn't any furniture moving earlier in the episode.
No. Yes, so we're back and ready to talk about music and fun stuff.
Yes.
Mostly music.
That, I guess, revolves around us and our former band.
Yes, because Altoed. We feel like...
We get to mention it every time.
That's right. So if you have not listened to episode 1 and don't know who the hell we are or why you should care, we used to be in a band together called Tall Toad, as Mike just said, during the 90s in the Pacific Northwest, and we're going to explore what it was like to be down in the trenches.
Yes.
And working really hard and not getting very far.
Yes. It's not circle of redundancy.
Was that one of our albums? That should have been an album title.
Yes, trademarked.
So we're back to do some delving into musical history, mostly ours.
Yes.
So I thought today, because we covered the end of our career in the first episode, I thought maybe we could go way back today and kind of find out some stuff about each other that I don't know if we talked much about really back then.
Yeah.
So, hey, Mr. Bass player, how did you get into music to begin with? And you can go back as far as you need.
As far as I can remember.
Are you sure?
Well, I was at the record store last week. No. I guess it would be a lot of it. Well, my mom and her very minuscule record collection. And my sister, who, of course, you know, was a budding preteen / super early teen in the 70s.
Right. So she was your older sister.
Yeah, she's 4 years older than me. So she was born in 64.
Always helps to have some kind of older family member.
Yeah, so around the mid-70s, she probably would have been, 12, 13?
Right.
So just getting into the 70s rock and roll music.
Golden age. For music and for getting into music.
Yeah, and I guess, early, we had this thing back in our childhood that was called the AM radio. And that was all we had in, my dad's truck. That was the only vehicle we had. And I just remember
all sounding really familiar.
Beatles. That's how I came to get into them from that. And my mom's one Beatles album she had.
Which one?
Is the American version of Hard Day's Night.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it had the George Martin.
Yeah.
And my mom also had albums by the Wailers. The Fabulous.
Oh,
yeah, it's like,
wow.
Good the She didn't have any of the Sonics, but I found out she went to a dance where the Sonics played.
Oh, you're kidding.
In Fife.
What?
At the Magic Castle.
Oh, man.
Or whatever, the Spanish Castle.
The Spanish Castle, right. That's amazing.
And I was just like, what? Mom's cooler than I thought.
Your mom's cooler than you, dude.
So, that's amazing. It was a lot of that. You know, let's get my headphones on, listening to the few records that we had.
Right.
Over and over
again. Yeah. Well, at least you had cool records.
Yeah, and like I said, my sister, while she did get into disco.
That's inevitable.
She did listen to, like, a lot of course, you know, Ted Nugent. She liked Kiss for a brief period. In fact, she almost saw them in 1979.
Oh, man.
The downward spiral tour.
Like, right. Oh. Still, it was still the original members. That would have been cool.
Yeah, so it was this, you know, record she had.
Yeah.
And what about you?
Well, similar in method, wildly different in actual music. And instead of a sister, because I'm an only child, in my case, it was cousins, older cousins. But my music growing up, we also had a small record collection, but it was all, it was a weird mixture of like old country, like the good stuff. Yeah. But I didn't appreciate it then, really.
Of course not.
Actually, as a kid, I was indifferent, I guess. But it would be like Dolly Parton. I still remember the Coat of Many Colors song.
Oh,
that
nice.
One was always being played. George Jones, because my mom loved George Jones. And then later it would have been Kenny Rogers.
Of course.
Because my mom liked Kenny Rogers. I feel like these were all dictated by my mom. Now that
really?
I think about it. I don't think, my dad didn't really own records. He just listened to whatever, I guess, my mom had. But so it was old country. And then like church songs. They literally had albums of church songs. So it was church songs and country music as far as at home. Also, we had also AM radio in the truck.
Yes.
But I can't really remember what they would listen to when I was really little, when it was just the AM radio. But I do remember later it would have been country. Again, there's a lot of country. But also television really kind of was where I would hear music.
Yeah.
So other than listening to whatever my parents had, I would hear the tangents begin. When I would go to my cousin's house, these would be cousins of my own age. They had weird records at their house. So I would go. Yeah.
Do you remember any of them?
Yeah. One of the ones they had the single of the They're Coming to Take Me Away song.
Coming to
take me away. Yeah. And I thought that was deranged, and it is, but I kind of liked it at the same time. So I would hear that. I would hear that Snoopy versus the Red Baron.
Oh, yeah.
Song. These were all singles. They all had like singles. And then the albums they had were like the Smothers Brothers.
Really?
Which, there's music on there because they'd sing songs. So.
Well, so how old were you at the time?
This would have been when I was like 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there, where I was kind
impressionable.
Of impressionable. Yeah. like paying attention to music on purpose, but still just sort of blindly listening to whatever was around. And then later my older cousins began to have an influence. And so they were into rock and roll, same era, whatever, late '70s, mid to late '70s. And that would have been the first time that's not true. But I heard a lot. They had 8 tracks.
Oh, yes.
They actually had 8 tracks. So I remember my older cousin had Kiss Alive 2 on 8-track.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I remember sitting in her room and playing the 8-track, and I like halfway through I Stole Your Love or something, and they're like, ka-chonk.
I was going to ask you, what song did it?
Because they would just do it wherever. They didn't care.
Yeah, it was always one song. It went from what? Usually side three to side four.
Yeah.
Split in half. Yeah. For those of you who don't know about 8-tracks.
They were a brilliant idea. If you like your songs chopped randomly. But yeah, so she had those. And so I would start to kind of hear some rock and roll. And I was watching TV where, I mean, that was the era where you had like every show two or three times a week, there was like some weird variety show. And yeah. So it would have full of music because they had to cram the show full of something. Because they were the 70s were weird, man. And so I would hear like, I don't know. Oh, like, okay, here's an example. So I used to watch the Hardy Boys.
Oh, yeah.
TV with, show with Sean Cassidy.
That's right. Sean Cassidy and Parker Stevenson.
Parker Stevenson, yes. So clearly I would have heard Sean Cassidy because, or like the Partridge Family, speaking of Cassidy's. So mm-hmm. like I would hear music like that and be like, I guess that's rock and roll. but like on the Partridge, not the Partridge Family, the other show.
Which was another show. The other show,
yes. And I did have a David Cassidy album, and I had Sean Cassidy 45s.
Yeah, the brothers.
The brothers. Brothers Cassidy. Why didn't they ever team up for a mega band? But I'm really getting off base now, but the memories are flooding in. But stuff like that. And actually, earlier today, I was just thinking, because this is going to come up, obviously. Probably every episode, this band is going to get mentioned. Which we already did, but I was for a lot of rock stars of, you know, guys that we looked up to and knew about. I feel like all like the original rock stars, they'd say like, "How'd you get into rock and roll?" And they'd be like, "I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan." Or
yeah.
If the older ones, maybe Elvis. You know. Oh. Show's over. Thanks for listening, folks.
Sorry.
Biscuits are done. But yeah, so they had like Elvis or the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I feel like for a lot of people of our age, we had Kiss on the Paul Lynde Halloween special.
Yes.
So that was probably the eye-opening experience for me as far as where we end up later musically, was seeing Kiss, because that was the first time I saw them alive and moving around, moving around. As like real people. And then, boy, they were moving around. believe me, I recently watched the, you know, that Halloween special is available. Everyone should go online now and look for the Paul Lynde Halloween special.
Yes.
It's worth watching. Pay the $2.99 or whatever it is. It's glorious 70s craziness. But, yeah, so, and then a later also from TV would be the Bay City Rollers.
Oh, yes.
So I was just sort of going along, basically whatever people threw at me, I'd listen to it until I developed some taste of my own.
You know, and I, going back to the Bay City Rollers, I never understood, they're Scottish.
Yes.
But they're not from the Bay City.
No, you know what? Funny you should mention this. I always wondered that too, and I recently found out that this may be bullshit, but this is what I heard, that they took like a dart and threw it at a map and said, wherever that lands, that's going to be the name. And it landed in like Bay City, Michigan or somewhere. Yeah. Somewhere in America. And that was it. So they became the Bay City, Michigan Rollers. And then they took the Michigan out.
They were like, not as cool.
But I heard that recently, like fairly recently, so I'm sure it's absolutely true.
Because everything that you read online,
that's right,
is true.
That's right. And everything we say is true.
That's right.
To the best of our burnout memories. But so then later my older cousins also were getting into heavier rock, and I started to hear AC/DC.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't need to go any further than AC/DC, but stuff like that. AC/DC, I started with the rockest, and then I started thinking of lesser bands.
Lesser
bands? Like Foreigner, stuff like that.
And all right, nothing's going on.
Okay. We can edit that space out. So were you buying records yourself during that era?
Not yet. Not until, well, I mean, you know, we'd buy like those little 45, like, you know, Disney story records.
I had some.
Well,
of
you
those.
Hear the tone on the page. Ping. You know, that kind of. So yeah, I didn't buy my first record until like the very late 70s. My first record I got was from my sister for my birthday 1 year. So it had to be 78. It was Kiss,
oh,
Double Platinum.
Dude.
And I listened to that. I'd get out paper, you know, like put over the embossed.
Yes.
Or whatever that is. And they like trace them out while I'm listening to the record with my headphones on.
I think a lot of people did that. Man, once again, yours way cooler than mine. I don't remember what my first album was, but the first 45 that I bought on my own was, again, because of an older cousin who I idolized this guy. So whatever he was listening to, I was sort of like, that must be the cool thing. I bought a record by a, I don't know anything about this guy other than this song and this record, but I bought a record by a guy named Alan O'Day.
Alan O'Day.
Alan O'Day, and the song was called Undercover Angel.
Oh, I kind of remember that.
It was a
song.
Hit, but I don't remember the year, 70-something.
Like, Undercover Angel.
Midnight Fantasy. Yeah. It's super schmaltzy. But it was a hit, and I bought it. So I think that was the first record, not like a Frog and Toad or Friends, Schoolastic thing that I actually bought. And then also because of that cousin, I don't know if it was the next one that I bought, because I don't remember the year it came out, but I bought Toto's Hold the Line single, which I actually thought was heavy because that guitar is kind of heavy. Yeah, so I was like, whoa, that sounds cool.
Whoa.
Yeah, that part. Maybe not as cool, but the guitar was
because
pretty...
love isn't always on time.
Those guys were poets. But yeah, other than that, my little tiny record collection was Sean Cassidy 45s. I had to do Run.
And, oh, yes.
Hey Dini.
Wow, really? A
couple other ones, yes.
Man.
I didn't know. And again, if you didn't listen to the first episode, let me just reiterate that, well, Mike was living in Bonnie Lake.
Lake Taps. Yeah, / Sumner area.
So Lake Taps area of Washington. But I was living in Yelm, Washington, which especially back then was just a smear on the map. There's like nothing there. So I should feel lucky that I had music at all to listen to. Because it was really just out in the woods, man. So... yeah, I just listened to whatever came across the way.
Well, you know, you always had Wolves. You could go buy records there.
I did. That was the next evolution of my awareness of rock and roll was going to the department store in town, which was called Wolves. I'm just going to repeat things that you say. And it was one of those stores where one side was groceries and the other side was everything else. It was kind of, I don't even know if that kind of store exists anymore. I guess Walmart's kind of like that. But this was like a local, you know, owned department store. And they had a record section. And so while my parents would go grocery shopping, I'd go to the other side, which was vastly more interesting.
Oh, yes.
And look at the records and judge what was good by the cover art, which I still kind of do. So I would look at, like, who was big back then? I'd look at, like, a Leo Sayer album. And just glance at it and move on. And then I'd see, and I think we've talked about this before, but the ones that still stick in my head were, of course, any Kiss album.
Oh, yes.
And AC/DC's If You Want Blood, You've Got It, because it's got Angus impaled by a guitar on the front and with the guitar neck stuck in his back on the back cover and blood and stuff.
Yep.
Anything with blood I thought was cool.
And a shirtless Bond,
a shirtless Bond, like looking over his shoulder, all cool as shit. And I didn't know who any of these bands were yet, though. I'd never heard the music. I was just looking at cool covers. Meatloaf, the Bat Out of Hell album. I thought that was cool. I thought that must be a really heavy album because of the art. Man, I was surprised when I finally heard that record. Molly Hatchet records, because they always had the
guy with the axe.
Barbarians, yeah. And shit. And April Wine has that one album with the guy with a lion's head playing guitar. I don't know the name of the album, but I'd always look at that cover. The rock, the heavy stuff. Heavy. Air quotes. And so I was kind of like, whoa, there's something else out there. But I still hadn't really heard any of that music. I would look at those records, and then I'd go home and listen to Sean Cassidy. Yeah. So
then did any of that music help to inspire the song that we're going to play in a minute?
No. Not at all.
What did inspire that song?
Well... there's an actual story connected to this song, because jumping ahead a few years, when we became aware of the Melvins, we didn't just become aware, we became obsessed.
Yes, we did.
With the Melvins. And we were still in high school, but Mike and I and our friend Dan had decided to start a band, and the band was called Trepan, and we'll talk about that at some point.
Oh yes,
more in depth. But for this story, we wanted to see the Melvins, and we saw that they were playing in Seattle at a place called the Vogue. God, this was 87?
80, I think 86 or 86
or 87. And so being Hicks from Yelm, we thought we could just hop in a car and drive to Seattle and go see the Melvins. So we did that, and we get up there. Well, first we didn't know where we were.
Yeah.
We were lost. And then one of us saw the Melvins van, because back right. then they were driving that van with the Kiss faces on the side.
You couldn't miss it.
Yeah. So we're like, holy shit, that's the Melvins van. So we finally found the place. But guess what? You had to be 21 to get in. Oh, boy.
Maybe it's the bar. I don't think so.
No, we can just walk on in. So we had gone up, Mike and I and Dan, and Dan's older brother, Fred, who we're also going to talk about. And Fred could have gone in, but, you know, he was old enough. He was over 21. But we couldn't get in, so we were like, well, fuck, man. So that was a waste of time. So we decided to walk around Seattle since we were there. And we were at Pike Place, I think.
Oh, yes.
When we saw
I think I know this story.
Yeah, so I believe we were at Pike Place Market, and it was evening. And there was a – so it was closed, and – but there was a group of people over there. So we're like, oh, something's going on. Let's go where the action is. So we went over there, and there was some concrete steps going down, mm-hmm. and everybody was gathered around the top of the steps, and there was like an ambulance and stuff. And we looked down the steps, and there was a guy down there being worked on by medics, and they were trying to like tape him to one of those boards that they carry fucked up people on. And so we asked somebody what was going on, and somebody told us that that guy had tried to ride a shopping cart
down
the steps and was not successful.
Not in the least.
At all. So we watched them bring this poor sap up the steps, and he's all taped to this board, and he's like, he's all fucked up. And so we're like, whoa, that's heavy. And then we walked around some more, and we ended up going back to the show where the show was happening and hanging around. And I remember the reason I bring up this whole story besides that, but the Melvins part, is I remember Fred wrote like a little song.
Oh, that's right. And then he tried to give it to Buzz Osborne.
So when we went back, I think it was Dan went up to the guy at the door and told him that we were dumbasses and came up to see the Melvins and didn't realize that we couldn't get in, and asked if he would ask Dale and Buzz and Matt. Was Matt still the bass player?
Yeah.
I think he was.
Yeah, because we ended up seeing the Melvins.
Right.
No. Wait a minute. Or was that? No.
Was that after that?
Maybe it was after that.
Here's where the fuzzy memories make things interesting. I think Matt was still in the band, but he didn't come out.
He was probably smoking weed somewhere.
I'm sure. He was probably drunk already. But anyway, Dan asked if the Melvins would come out, and talk to us, which, bold move, Dan.
Yeah.
But it worked, believe it or not. Buzz and Dale
came
out and talked to us, and they were super cool. I remember telling Dale, I was like, we're just a bunch of hicks, man, from a small town. And he was like, yeah, so are we. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you are.
Yeah. Cool.
And well, Gluey was out. Their first album was out, because I remember talking to Buzz about the album. And he said they just went in and dropped a bunch of Black Sabbath records on the producer and was like, make us sound like that or something like that.
That's right. He did like, what, six tracks of guitars?
Yeah.
Or
just
heavy, really heavy.
Just thickened.
Thickened.
The thickening. But it was really cool. Anyway, they were super cool to come out and talk to us. But yeah, Fred tried to give Buzz that song. He's like, hey, we wrote a song for you, Buzz. Buzz was like, thank you very much.
Yeah, he didn't seem very impressed.
No, but he was polite enough.
Yeah.
Probably
sat on the dashboard of their van for years.
I would give anything to see those lyrics.
Because he wrote.
So anyway, besides Fred, that whole incident inspired this song that we're about to play.
And it's called?
It's called
Twitch.
It's,
No, it's right. No, sorry. It's called. It's a dead guy.
It's a dead guy.
Enjoy.
Dead guy, it's lying there, it's dead guy, and nobody cares. okay, man?
Yeah, so that was It's a Dead Guy.
That was technically our first song.
I believe it was. It's the first one I can remember anyway. And it's based on seeing that poor sap that we just talked about. Yes. And back then we would just see something and write a song about it.
That's right.
Very inspirational.
Let the spirit move you.
Let it, yeah.
By a poor guy strapped to a board.
Yeah. I wish I should have asked him his name. We could at least give him some immortality.
Yes. But, where is he now?
I hope he recovered and is totally fine.
Yes. And never going to ride shopping carts down steps again.
Learn your lesson. Yeah, he was not in a good way. But his tragedy was our fortune.
Oh, we're such assholes. Yeah.
But the recording you just heard, actually, we recorded, even though that was one of our first songs, or possibly our very first song, that recording was done a few years later up at Evergreen College with our friend Brooks Martin.
Yes, the Mighty Brooks.
Mighty Brooks. MB.
MB.
I don't know.
Yes, didn't we want to ask him to be our manager at some point? And he could go by George Brooks Martin.
That's right. Yeah. I do vaguely recall that.
Oh, no, be our engineer. That's right.
The engineer. Yes. Yes. And we, yeah, George. Get it? Because his last name's Martin.
Yeah.
But, so hope you enjoyed that little slabo punk rock. Yeah,
stroll down memory lane.
We thought since in the first episode we'd played a super long song that we'd cut you some slack this time.
Yeah, we actually have a crappy practice recording, but then since the song last time was a crappy practice, we wanted to show that
right.
We could actually do a recording.
That's right. I have a memory. We won't go too far on this, but I do remember when we were doing those sessions with Brooks and the other guy.
Yeah.
Who I don't remember. It was someone we didn't know. I do remember Brooks telling me that guy was mad because we were tuned so low that it was almost impossible to record us properly. And I would like apologize to that guy. Because, man, when I listened to those songs, I realized we were...
I think Brooks complained about it. He's like, man, you guys are like, what, two octaves down or something like
that. I think we defied physics somehow.
It's like my bass was just audible enough. It's like almost below the human threshold of hearing.
That's pretty ridiculous. Oh, my God. But anyway, let's go back to what we were talking about before that. So we were kind of starting to find our own music, and you mentioned that your sister gave you for your birthday.
Yes, Kiss Double Platinum.
Double Platinum.
Which is, I think, the record that made me really want... I mean, you know, it's like listening to, you know, the Wailers and the Kingsmen and, you know, that one Beatles record.
Right.
I mean, I wanted to play music, but I didn't have a driving enough
right
force until... Lo and behold, I heard Kiss of all bands. It's like, no, you know, all these other great bands you've been listening right. to.
The Beatles, what? They're not inspiring at all.
Songs by guys who just sing about screwing women.
Yeah, I remember the Double Platinum TV commercial because that was the first, I think that was the first time I saw Gene spit blood, because there's a shot of him down on his knees with his head back and blood's just coming out of his mouth. And I remember just going, holy shit. Well, I don't think I swore yet.
You went, holy cow. Golly gee, look at the blood.
Yeah. maybe. I don't, well, I started swearing in fourth grade, so actually maybe I was. Maybe I said, holy fuck.
You
kind of
said it quietly under your breath, so your parents would know.
Right.
Holy fuck.
But anyway, I was super impressed. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that's a pretty common story. As much shit as Kiss gets, even from us sometimes.
Yes.
There's no denying they made a lot of people want to play music.
And yeah.
I also, when I Ace was my favorite, and
oh yes,
I would hear. I didn't know what lead guitar was. I just knew guitar. But when I heard Paul say Ace Frehley lead guitar, I'd be like, well, clearly I want to be lead guitar, whatever the hell that is. I don't want to be Paul.
No,
he's got a guitar, but I don't know what he's doing with it.
Dancing with it half the time.
It's his dance partner. Yeah. But Ace was playing the damn thing, and I was like, man, I want
to
be
in fact,
that
playing
guy.
So hard, it starts to smoke.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I remember that was also in the double platinum commercial.
Right, yeah, the smoking guitar, the glowing pickup. Yeah, I took that stuff seriously. I thought it was real in a weird way. I just,
yeah.
So you wanted to play music, but you were still only like 10 years old or something.
Well, yeah.
12.
My dad, no. He doesn't like music. He'll listen to some of it, if like country.
Right.
You know, or old rock and roll.
Yeah.
Especially, he likes the Beach Boys, oddly enough. Huh. Because the early songs, because they sang about cars.
Ah, there you go.
And girls. Not the surfing, though. Hippies. But yeah, so he, you know, wasn't very supportive, you know, because I wanted to play guitar like you. It's right. Like, I wanted to be like Ace Frehley.
Right.
Because he's the fucking coolest guy in the band.
Yep.
But yeah, so I don't remember why I picked bass eventually.
Yeah, I don't know either. If I have ever asked you that in all the years we've known each other, and I've meant to. When we talked about doing this, I was like, one thing I am going to ask Mike is why he ended up playing bass. I was wondering, this is a huge jump in time, but I was wondering if it was because of Lee, because like Lee was already playing guitar, or did you want to do something before you guys started playing together?
I wanted to do something before that.
Okay.
I had this picture of Lee. Yeah, it's a picture of him trying to play Paranoid.
Mike's first band.
Yes. I think... because my stepdad had a guitar, and I think I tried to like learn a couple of chords, and most likely I was probably like, man, this is too hard. Maybe bass will be easier, right. And then I could learn guitar.
Right.
So they, you know, it's like, yeah, it's got four fucking strings, but it's still got a weird aspect to it that you got to get used to, and like, you're a rhythm player.
Right. You're right. See, I didn't even have an awareness. I didn't know the difference between a bass guitar and a guitar. I didn't know an acoustic guitar from an electric guitar. I just knew guitar is a thing. But I wanted to play. I remember wanting to play guitar when I was a kid. Mm. And somebody, some relative of mine had a really weird, now that I think back, at the time I didn't know what it was, but thinking back, I think it might be like one of those early Sears electric guitars,
yeah.
Like from the 60s, maybe 50s, 60s, whenever they were making those really cheap, like sunburst, weird electric guitars. But so they had one of those, but it didn't have strings. So I remember, and it was really dusty, so I was just kind of laying around. But I remember picking it up and being like, hey, guitar, you know, this is cool. But it didn't have strings, so I didn't know. I still didn't know how to play. I just knew I wanted to look cool holding it, right? You know, so I would just hold it kind of and pretend like I was playing.
Put one of your records on it.
Yeah. Be Ace Frehley. But so I didn't know, like, I didn't know Gene Simmons played bass guitar. I just see they're all holding guitars. I didn't know the difference.
Right.
I was very slow to grasp a lot of things. and that was one of them. But so let's see. So you heard all that music from your sister and you and your mom, who's apparently super cool.
Yeah.
Way cooler than my mom. Sorry, mom.
Oh, your mom is cool.
She did like some weird stuff, I found out later. But musically, that is. But then eventually, as we all do, we start just kind of finding our own music and deciding what we like and what we're going to, you know, what's going to be our thing.
Hmm.
So you heard Kiss and you wanted to play music, yep. but then you started finding your own music. Like, where'd you go from there?
Well, I know it took my sister a long, no, she didn't even buy me. I think she gave me money. It was because I started to kind of be interested in like Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Around what? 79, wow. 80.
Yeah. You're way like ahead of me, man.
11 or 12. And it,
yeah.
And she promised me, she's like, I'm going to buy you. And it was, we sold our soul for rock and roll. You know, it's like a collection of
yeah.
their good shit.
Right.
And she never did until about like 82, 83.
Yeah.
I went to that weird little record store that popped up.
Yeah. Out in Yelm?
Yeah, it had yeah. like an arcade, I think,
yes.
on the other side.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I bought that record. But yeah, that's kind of when I guess I realized, you know, it's like I like a lot of music, but you know, I started to kind of drift more towards like the heavier music.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I was hearing, oddly enough, when I started to hear music on my own and absorb it more, it was weirdly on my school bus, because I had a long bus ride, you know where I lived.
Yeah, yeah.
Way out in the middle of nowhere. And around about middle school years, so 5th to 8th grade, was when I really started to find my own thing. But they were playing the popular radio station at the time, Seattle Station. I want to say, I'm going to say this and then look it up later. I think it was KNBQ.
That sounds
familiar.
Does that
sound like a real
yeah.
station? I think it was KNBQ. And they played the stuff that I remember was like, that was where I first, you're going to laugh. But,
I'm already laughing. So,
Sammy Hagar. So it was like rock stuff and some of it was heavier than others, but Sammy Hagar, Heart.
Oh,
so I got
yeah.
started hearing Heart, Quarter Flash. Remember
oh,
that band?
I do.
Yeah.
Weren't they from Washington?
I feel like they were. Yeah. Like, and they briefly had like one record.
Yeah.
Or something,
it was like
and,
a minor hit song.
Yeah. And then went away. But
so it was literally a Quarter Flash.
But oh, Billy Squire.
Oh,
but
yes.
so some of those, Pat Benatar. So like, you know, rock, radio rock and Journey.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to shut up because bands keep popping into my head. Loverboy.
Name but, dropper.
But the one thing, the songs I liked a lot seemed to have in common was some kind of guitar riff. They weren't just like, I don't know, like Fleetwood Mac or something where you're not like, what a cool riff. You
oh,
know?
Yeah.
But like... like I would hear, "There's only one way to rock," for instance, by Sammy Hagar. I'd be like, you know, the guitar is prominent and like in your face, and I'd be like, "That's what I like."
Right.
And then I kind of put that together with Kiss, who I was the only real rock band I was listening to before that, and my brain just was like, "You like." Loud guitar, you know, that that's where you're going to go. And so I started with those kind of that kind of music just from hearing it on the bus to and from school. And.
Wow.
Back over to you. yeah. So that started to be my influence. And then I would just pick up stuff that sounded vaguely like that.
Well, yeah, you listen to the radio and. Yeah, I remember I would write down bands to remember, to look for.
Right.
If I ever got money to buy a record.
Right. Yeah, wasn't a lot of record buying on my end yet either.
But yeah, it's just the heavy music.
Yeah, and then I remember, so the defining, really defining moments for me musically, I feel like, we talked about this recently, so I'm not going to go into the my first Kiss story, but I do remember around that time, the middle school years, going over to my cousin's to stay at his house that night, and he always would leave his stereo on when he went to bed. So I was on the floor sleeping, and I was kind of near the stereo, so it's dark except for the little green glow of the stereo, you know, and the music's kind of on low, but you can still kind of hear it, and my head's near the speaker, and I'm laying on the floor and just kind of not super paying attention, just thinking about shit. And but then out of the speaker came a riff that like just went straight into my soul. And it was just one note, but hit three times. And I perked up. I was like, whoa, what is that? And then, I was like, what?
You heard like angels.
It was almost a little 4 foot tall Australian angel came out of the sky and, with a cigarette and bottle of beer.
So there was rock to be let.
It really was. But yeah, I heard Highway to Hell by AC/DC for the first time that night, and it just, that was it. That guitar got into my head and I was like, what? I need to know everything about whatever that is. And that's when I got stupid serious about music. Like, I started going down that path, you know, I was like, ah, because that age, you're starting to look for your identity, you know.
Yeah.
Before that, I was just like a kind of fat geek dork.
Read a lot.
Geek dork. I read, played out in the woods, like Star Wars, all that, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then, like, whoa, music. Okay, I'm going to pursue that.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and it just happened to be that kind of loud rock, like kind of heavy stuff that seemed to really appeal to me. And then, man, my time frames get so blurry in that era. But I do remember another thing was this kid at school who was older. And so you were in Yelm. When did you move to Yelm?
When I was 12, so it would be sixth grade.
Okay.
So 1980.
Okay, so now we're pretty much in the same place.
Yes.
And so you're stuck in Yelm now.
I am, or I was. I'm not anymore.
We escaped. Okay, so interesting. So, but we didn't know each other yet.
No.
But we would. Yes. Very soon, and Kiss makes another appearance there.
Yes. And also Spinal Tap.
Here we go. What would you like to say about Spinal Tap? So that was the year. Those were the years. 82? Is that when This Is Spinal Tap came out?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. They're a good segue. It was around these years that the great movie This Is Spinal Tap came out, the first rock mockumentary.
Yes. And I have to say, I remember seeing posters for it, but I didn't really know what it was.
Same
until
here.
I started hanging out with you and Dan.
Yeah.
So I finally got to see it in all its glory.
Yes. I believe I rented that on a whim, the tape, the VHS.
Yes.
I had to rent the VHS player. That was back when you...
Yes. Yeah. It was like a big suitcase.
It was. It's like, yeah, like spies carry those suitcases that you have to handcuff. It kind of looked like that. They didn't trust you to take it home. And I believe I was like, I'm going to rent this Spinal Tap thing and see. Because by then, I was into the heavy music.
Uh-huh.
And I watched it and was blown away. And I think the very next day, I was like, made Dan watch it. And then we were obsessed. And
yes.
And ever since then, Spinal Tap has been, I mean, Those guys are good musicians.
They are. They can actually play and write, sing.
They're great to listen to, and they were weirdly an influence, I think, on our band.
Yeah, it's kind of. I'm kind of surprised that Trepan never tried to actually cover a Spinal Tap, because I know we did.
I am too. Now that you mention it,
we did one song in Tall Toad.
Yes.
We recorded it actually once. We have a few practice recordings, and so we thought, you know, hey, now since we're talking about Spinal Tap,
yes,
we just kind of play our favorite version that we did of the song Hellhole.
Hellhole, it's pretty amazing. This was caught on tape.
Yes, there's a big surprise in here.
Yes. We hope you enjoy it. I hope you all enjoyed that.
But you didn't see that coming.
Glorious train wreck. I'm so glad we captured that.
I know. I love that song. I felt that when we actually did the song, we did a really good version of it.
But that wasn't it. That's the more fun.
Yeah, I never get tired of listening to that version.
That's a pretty good representative of our practices back then.
Yeah.
That was recorded before we ever played a gig.
I think that was 1990.
Yeah.
That's when we were playing in Todd's bedroom, I think, upstairs.
Our first main practice space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our friend Todd Rice's house. So anyway, that's fun.
Yep.
Hellhole. So we were talking about Spinal Tap. And it came out in 82, and 82 was during our middle school years, and you had moved to Yelm.
Yeah.
And we were both kind of parallel, you know, discovering heavy music, but we didn't know each other yet.
No, but I think, oddly enough, I think we first met in 1982.
Whoa!
Eighth grade, right?
It was eighth grade. It was definitely eighth grade. So here's the story of how Scott and Mike met. I, being a huge Kiss nerd from 76 was with the Paul Lynde special.
Yeah.
So that was my very first exposure. So I guess, even though I didn't really know much about him as a fan, so 76, all the way through the declining years.
Yeah. 78. Kiss meets the Phantom.
That's right.
Park.
Well, that's a sore spot for me. So we'll have to talk about that another time.
Sorry.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. In middle school, so Kiss obviously was not cool anymore.
No.
By 1982.
Had they done music from The Elder yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think Yeah, because Creatures came out in 82, so Elder, I think, was 81. Mm. Unmasked was 80. Yeah, so all those weird albums, they just didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Nope.
Losing fans left and right.
Losing members left and right. The cool members.
Yeah, the cool members are now not even in the band, so really no reason to listen to Kiss. But weirdly, I still kind of liked them, but I was like a closet Kiss fan because I do remember, I believe it was sixth grade, I was writing the Kiss logo on on the chalkboard at school, and I remember this fucking dumbass dude came up to me. I don't know who he was, but he's bigger than me. He was like, "Kiss isn't cool anymore, man. REO Speedwagon." So I was like, "Oh shit,
that's right."
Yeah. So then I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm Kiss. I'll hide my Kiss love." But to be honest, by eighth grade, I wasn't thinking much about Kiss. I had heard Number of the Beast was out in 82. I had heard Ozzy by then, Sabbath,
AC/DC.
Iron Maiden. Oh, I just said Iron Maiden. Yeah, all the AC/DC. I finally figured out that the guy that was on Back in Black was not the guy that sang the Jack, and then it made sense.
Like, yeah.
They sounded nothing alike.
Well, see, which is funny because I had heard all that, but, you know, I was kind of still behind the time a little bit because I was still a Kiss fan.
Well, there you go. So this is how we ended up meeting finally. So in the 70s, man, you people who didn't get to live in the 70s missed out on some cool shit.
Yes, you did.
So in the 70s, they made a bubblegum card out of anything.
Yep.
I had Mork and Mindy bubblegum cards. And for those of you who don't know what a bubblegum card is, it's just like the cards you collect now, except you got a pink rock came with it.
You didn't...
like a thin pink rock.
You know, you didn't want to chew it, but, you know, they probably would have like, hey, you know, that's just for display only. But you would still try.
Yes, you were compelled.
Cut your gums. But moving on.
That's right. So... of course, Kiss being never ones to not make money off of something had bubblegum cards. And so I collected, my main collections were Star Wars and Kiss cards. But in 82, I decided I was all grown up now or something. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking, but I decided I was going to get rid of my Kiss cards and I wanted to sell them. And you'll have to take that up because I forget how you even found out about it.
I think, I want to say it's because our mutual friend, Robert Thomas, who was also a Kiss fan.
That makes sense.
And I think he said, hey, I know this guy who's selling this big stack of Kiss cards. And I was like, oh, really? I have some, but I would like more, yes. And I think he said it was... Was it like a dollar?
Dollar. Something like that. Oh, yeah. I was asking a dollar.
Probably about a stack that was about two and a half inches tall.
Yeah. It was a goodly amount.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay.
Dollar was a lot of money back then.
So we met.
Yeah.
Introduced ourselves.
First time we met.
Exchanged. In fact, I remember you were nice enough. They were in a case, like one of those clear cases.
Oh, wow.
Like the tall ones.
Well, that was nice of me.
Yeah, this is kind of like,
I don't remember that at all.
And yeah, so I just, it was our first time of meeting each other. Yes. And I remember looking at it, and you had that Ace card that I'd always wanted, the one from, Ross Halfen. It's kind of down from stage level up where Ace is kind of leaning back and he's playing. And I was like,
exactly
that is
the
coolest
one you're talking about. Yep.
And I'm like, I finally have it. Made the whole dollar worthwhile.
But meanwhile, on my end.
the ironic thing, though, is that I don't know where the fuck those cards are.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
I'm like, shit.
Well, I don't know where that dollar is either. So. But that was, you gave me a dollar. I guess I was asking for a dollar. I don't know why. I don't know what I was thinking. I came to regret selling you those cards later, probably pretty quickly, if I'm being honest. But we didn't like hang out even still for a couple more years. So, yeah. But that was the first time we met, and we met over a kiss.
That's right.
And that would have been towards the end of middle school. And then in high school, I really geared up to be a headbanger.
So did I.
And as did you.
I remember I got a leather coat from my grandmother for a Christmas present. And I thought that was cool, even though the leather was kind of weird because it didn't look like the soft leather. It was that kind of shiny black leather.
Right.
I'm like, ah, this thing is just, it's never going to wear in. And I still have that coat today.
Wow. Did it ever wear in?
No. A little bit. I get, you know, there's some wrinkles. Oh, but man. It wasn't, you know, the cool, like,
right
looking.
Lemmy.
Yeah.
The Lemmy style.
Or eventually, like, when I saw Lars Ulrich.
Yeah.
In that black and gray. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that once at a mall. I think it was Tacoma Mall.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was like $250 even then. I think I tried it on. I'm like, oh, man. What? I want to be like Lars.
Be like Lars.
And now I'm like, don't be like Lars.
Well, he moved on to white leather, so he went all Axl Rose. Yeah, I wanted a leather jacket, but my first attempt at a leather jacket was like it was leather, but it was just it wasn't like a biker jacket. It wasn't like a metal jacket. It was just a black leather jacket, more like the Fonz
with the elastic.
Well, it didn't actually have the elastic, but I had a fake one that looked like that because of the Fonz. But yeah, so that's not what I wanted, but I did the best I could. I made things. I tried to be metal as possible. But I think we'll probably get into that maybe next episode. Start talking about the high school years, and because that's when music really just became everything to
me.
Yeah,
well, because we, as we'll talk in the next episode, there is that radio show.
Yes,
that we both listen to.
Yes,
but yeah, it really. I mean, if it was a germinating,
yeah,
you know, like not really. I guess that would be germinating up until. What, sprouting? I don't know, whatever.
It did, yes. It was sprouting.
What a note to end on.
I think we ended in laughter the last episode, too. So.
Yeah, and Scott will also tell you about the cool watch band that he always wore.
That's right. And, yeah, we're going to talk about a lot of... because we didn't still hang out in the same circles. This was, again... Yelm, so 1980s, middle of nowhere. Not a lot of people with long hair even yet.
No, for Casey Campbell.
That's right. Another huge influence. But starting to notice, so if you did have long hair or had like a Metallica t-shirt or whatever, you kind of knew those people because there weren't very many of us at that time.
And so. You were eventually going to gravitate towards each other.
That's right, so... So it was inevitable that we were going to bond over more than kiss cards, and we'll probably talk about that next episode, unless we don't want to.
Yeah. Who knows?
So thanks for listening. Episode 2 in the can.
That's right. Have a great week, everybody.
Yep. Rock on. Listen to some records. Listen to some Alan O'Day. Listen to Sammy Hagar, but don't listen to Van Hagar.
No, but listen to Roth.
Yes. Bye, everybody.